Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You mean we would sell the bodies to the doctors together to dig them up?
There'll be no digging. The kirkyards are too well guarded. We will, so to speak, burk them.
Burk them?
You are lately come to Scotland, Joseph.
I come from Lisbon.
But you may have heard the chapbook singers and peddlers of verse cry their names down the street. You know, the ruffian dogs, the hellish pair, the villain Burk, the meagre hare.
Never heard the song. What did they do?
18 people they killed and sold the bodies to Dr. Knox. £10 for a large, 8 for a small. That's good business, Joseph.
Where did they get the people?
That was Hare's end. Oh, you should have seen him on the streets. When he saw some old beldame deep in drink, how he cozened her. Good day to you, Madam Tosspot. And would you like a little glass of something before you take your rest? Come with me to my house, and you shall be my guest. You shall have quarts to drink, if you like. How he cozened them.
We can do that. But when he get them there, then what?
Nor did they handle axe or knife to take away their victim's life. No sooner done than in the chest they crammed their lately welcome guest.
I don't understand the song. Tell me plain how they did it.
I'll show you how they did it, Joseph. I'll show you how they burked them.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni. This is The Shocking Details.
Rolling.
All right, here we go. Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. Brought to you by our sponsors, whose products will make you better, faster, smarter, and sexier. So don't hesitate. Buy their stuff now. All right. So back to the regular thing. I am Joe, joined as always by
Vincent Caldoni.
All right. So, Vincent and I were just noticing it's the month of October, which means it's time for some creepy stories, don't you think, Vincent?
I think so.
Hell yeah.
It's just that time of year.
Yeah, so it's time for some tales of the macabre. And this story, I think everybody will agree, is fairly macabre. It's about a scary string of murders in Scotland in the early 19th century. And the murders were bad enough, but the method of body disposal was exceptionally macabre. I think you'll have to agree.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, yeah. And these guys are well known.
Oh, yeah. You probably heard the name. You know, we're talking, of course, about Burk and Hare.
Burk and Hare.
Yeah. Two of history's most famous or infamous serial killers. Most of our listeners, I'm sure, like I said, have heard the names, and their exploits were so well known in that day, back in the 19th century, it caused a new word to be entered into the dictionary, burking.
Yeah. Which you heard in the intro.
To burk someone. And you don't want to be burked, by the way. And what is it? Well, we'll explain that in a minute.
So where to begin? Well, first let's meet our heroes, such as they are.
Yeah.
William Burk and William Hare, both Williams, mm-hmm. Were Irish immigrants from Ulster living in Edinburgh, Scotland in the year 1827. And they both came to Scotland to work on the Union Canal project, which is a canal that connected Falkirk to Edinburgh. And they stayed on after it was finished in 1822. William Hare operated a boarding house in Tanner's Close, just south of Edinburgh Castle.
Just like a stone's throw, literally. Literally, like 100 yards south.
Yeah, Tanner's Close, there were a lot of tanneries there. That's why it's called that. It's not there anymore.
Yeah.
It was demoed way back, and there's a modern, ugly office building there now.
Yeah, you can see it on Street View, and it really is ugly.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Edinburgh Castle, by the way, is an extremely mysterious place. We could almost do an episode just about Edinburgh Castle.
Maybe we will.
Yeah, it's got weird labyrinths underneath it. We'll get to that another time. Hare was a tenant in the boarding house, from what I've heard. And when the owner died, and he kind of inherited it by marrying the owner's widow, Margaret Laird, the word on the street is that they were actually never legally married. But she went by the name Margaret Hare anyways.
Yeah, I'm not sure about this. I believe that they actually were common law married. They've been together or living together long enough that it became a common law marriage. Because this issue of whether they were married or not actually does come up a little bit later on. Mm-hmm. In the legal proceedings. But then William Burke, the other guy, the other Bill, he moved into a hovel on Tanner's Close nearby with his wife, Helen McDougal. Though, of course, again, they weren't actually married. And they had not been together long enough, I think, to be considered common law married. Now, Burke and Hare had met previously when working on the Union Canal. So they knew each other, and they renewed their buddyship, I guess you'd call it, their friendship.
Their bromance.
And discovering, they had a mutual interest in drinking booze, and, And then in 1827, Burke's hovel burned down that he and Helen were living in. So they moved into William Hare's boarding house. So one big, happy, boozing family, right?
Yeah. I imagine it all went great.
Well, apparently, yeah.
In December of 1827, that month would turn out to be a defining time for Burke and Hare. One of Hare's tenants was an old army pensioner who went by the name of Old Donald. And Old Donald got sick and died in December. And worst of all, he died owing Hare £4 in back rent.
Yeah, that's a lot of back rent, by the way. I mean, seriously. I'm actually amazed they let him get that far behind in rent.
It's actually a lot of money.
Back in those days, it was a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, sure. It doesn't sound like these guys had a lot to throw around either.
Yeah, no.
But the guy with the horse-drawn cart who went around yelling, "Bring out your dad," had just gone by the day before. And they didn't want Old Donald laying around stinking the place up for an entire week. Is it really how this worked?
Yeah, I think so. It's a week, right? Yeah.
I don't know. That's like the recycling. So Burke and Hare decided to sell the body.
Yeah, because it turns out that Old Donald was good for something other than fertilizer, because there was a demand for corpses from anatomy schools, which were springing up all over Britain at the time. The scientific study of medicine was just starting to really get underway, which, of course, to the benefit of us all, even today, it was finally looking like medicine would be a little less random and a little less likely to kill you versus help you. So it was a good thing, but there was a downside. A lot of major universities had anatomy schools, and private schools popped up as well. The downside is they needed dead bodies of human beings to dissect. And demand for dead bodies was very high.
Hmm.
But luckily, there was a steady supply thanks to the Bloody Code. Now, what was the Bloody Code? Well, that was a nickname for British law concerning the death penalty, because that began to expand quite a lot in the late 17th century.
Hmm.
And the number of crimes that carried the death penalty in the year 1688 was about 50. By the year 1815, it was 215 crimes, hence the nickname Bloody Code. Mm-hmm. 215 crimes that you could be hanged for in Britain.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. So, want to list some of those crimes off?
Murder.
Arson.
Forgery.
Cutting down trees.
Stealing horses or sheep.
Destroying turnpike roads.
Stealing from a rabbit warren.
Pickpocketing goods or money worth a shilling or more.
Being out at night with a blackened face.
Being an unmarried mother, concealing a stillborn child.
Stealing from a shipwreck.
Wrecking a fish pond.
There were many reasons why English law was so harsh at the time. The death penalty was seen as a great deterrent, obviously. Mm-hmm. Also, it was felt by many, at the top of the food chain at least, that criminals were simply morally depraved down to their core, and they deserved to be treated harshly.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect also that hanging people was cheaper than locking them up.
But like it or not, the one thing you could say for the Bloody Code is that it kept the medical schools very well supplied with cadavers for dissection.
That's a good point.
And that changed in 1823 with the passage of the Judgment of Death Act. This gave British judges discretion to pass a lesser sentence than death. So suddenly, a lot fewer people were being hanged.
This was not great for the anatomy schools. The supply of corpses shrank down quite a bit.
Mm.
As you might expect, private enterprise then stepped into the breach. This new profession came into being. They called them resurrection men, a term I just love. I just adore
I do too. It's awesome.
Yeah. So these guys would basically wait around till someone had been, you know, buried, and as freshly as they could, they'd get that body out of there and sell it. And to
wait till after nightfall, and then
just head in at night.
The moon. Yeah.
This practice met with a lot of public revulsion, as you can imagine.
Oh yeah.
It's also pretty creepy. I mean, it's also, you know, indiscriminate. You know, this could be your loved one that they were doing this to.
Yeah, that's why it upset so many people.
You know? Yeah, but believe it or not, digging up a corpse and stealing it wasn't actually illegal at the time.
No, it was just kind of gobsmacking when you consider that you could get the death penalty for stealing a shilling or wearing blackface.
Concealing a stillborn child, what?
Now, the most they could get you for, I mean, grave robbery itself was illegal, I guess. I mean, if you broke into a grave and stole jewelry off a corpse, that's illegal. You're stealing property that's worth something, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we stole the corpse itself, though. No problem.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So there was money to be made. And yeah, it was totally legal. So you'd think that every corpse in the land would be exhumed. But of course, there were a few limiting factors. The first was not many people, no matter how poor they were willing to stoop so low. I mean, you would be an outcast if you were found to be doing this. This was not a respectable trade.
Oh, God, no. God, no. And plus, if the family caught you digging up dear old mom, they probably would kill you. That's another thing. There was a certain risk to it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But back to Burke and Hare, they had principles, too. Neither one of those guys was ever actually a resurrection.
No, they were not.
No, they weren't. But one day it did occur to them that they could achieve the same ends and skip the part where they got their hands dirty. But they would have to get their hands dirty in kind of another way.
Yeah. When old Donald died, they waited until the coffin maker had nailed the lid shut on the body and gone away. They then pried the coffin open, removed Donald's remains, and substituted a bunch of tanning bark to give the coffin a little heft. They took the body to the medical school at Edinburgh University, and the med school was okay for corpses at the moment, so they recommended that Burke and Hare then take the body to one Professor Robert Knox, who was a popular anatomy lecturer who ran a private school, and I believe was a really respected guy in his time.
He was actually quite good. Typically the private anatomy schools were actually quite a bit better than the universities at that time, because university professorships were usually doled out on kind of a patronage basis. And so the mediocre ones wound up at the universities, so you really had to go to the private schools to get good instruction. And Knox was not only extremely knowledgeable and competent, but also very witty, and gave really fun lectures while he was busy carving up a human corpse, you know. Mm-hmm. So people liked him.
So Knox's assistant paid them £7.10. £7.10, that was a lot of money.
It was a lot of money back in those days.
Obviously that's not that much now, but back then that's good pay.
So
the assistant told them to come again if they ever had another body to dispose of.
And Burke and Hare, by the way, were actually surprised that they got so much money for old Donald's corpse. That was about 6 months' pay for an unskilled laborer. And so they lived off of that for actually a good part of the winter. They didn't immediately run out and start killing people, though. But along about February 1828, a tenant at Hare's boarding house, an old guy named Joseph the Miller, became ill. And it looked to Burke and Hare like he was doomed anyway. And plus, the guy was running a fever and was delirious, which was bad for business. Running a boarding house, most people didn't want to be, you know, in the same house as somebody who was sick. Remember, this was back in the day before antibiotics and stuff. So, and so Burke and Hare decided to hasten the process a little bit. They had a little drinking session with Joseph the Miller. And when he was too drunk to be useful in a fight, Burke laid down across his chest while Hare put his hand over Joseph's mouth and used the other to squeeze his nostrils shut. In a mere moment, they had themselves a fresh corpse. And best of all, the method left no signs of violence on the body. It appeared to be a natural death.
As we heard in our little intro from the really amazing Val Lewton film, I forget who directed it, but Val Lewton produced it I think 1945 with Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really go see it. It's really good.
There's been a number of films made about Burke and Hare.
There's a lot of them. And actually, there's a number of really good ones, too.
Yeah, I know. And most recently, we were just talking about a comedy that came out in 2010 starring Simon Pegg and Andy Serkis.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
I have not seen that one yet. I guess I need to go see it.
Yeah, they got £10 for Joseph. And typically, they got £8 to £10 for a body. It's pretty good, depending on the condition and the quality.
Yeah.
That's not bad money.
Not at all. Easy work. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, as long as you pick nice, helpless victims who can't fight back anyway.
Right.
that was part of the MO there.
It was. So the next victim was a traveling Englishman whose name we don't know. He also had the bad luck to get sick at Hare's boarding house. Same rationalization. He's going to die anyway. So he used the same modus operandi. Next, an old woman named Abigail Simpson, a visitor to Edinburgh, who they just assumed wouldn't be missed. She was invited up to the house to booze it up with them. And she was the first of the victims who wasn't sick. But you could maybe say that they were rationalizing here, that maybe Burke and Hare sensed that, you know, she was old and sad and I guess needed to be put out of her misery. Maybe they thought she was in poor health. You
know, just they were doing her a favor, right?
Right. Yeah. She was, if I recall, I'm going off script here, which gets me in trouble. She was a pretty severe alcoholic, this victim. But yeah, she was too wasted to leave. And so they choked her, they suffocated her, and they put her in a box and trucked her over to Dr. Knox's school. 10 pounds in the bank, just like that.
Cha-ching. You gotta like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in March, Margaret Hare invited an old lady, name unknown. And by the way, yeah, their wives did get involved in the business here. It wasn't just Burke and Hare. Their old ladies were in on it too. Yeah, they were big time. But Margaret Hare invited an old lady, name again unknown, into the house for a drink. She kept the whiskey flowing until the lady fell asleep. And then when Hare got home, he smothered her. And then later, Burke came over and helped him take the body to Dr. Knox again. So more money. But then in April, they made their first mistake, or I should say Burke did. He met a couple of women in a pub and bought them a few drinks. And then invited him back to his place for breakfast and more drinking. Yeah, they were drinking. They were drinking in the pub before breakfast.
Yes.
It's commonly assumed that these two women were prostitutes, and it's probably true. Their names were Mary Patterson and Janet Brown. Back at home, they drank until Mary fell asleep or passed out, whichever, at the table. Burke and Janet continued drinking and chatting until Burke's wife, Helen, and I say that with air quotes, of course, came home and busted them. An argument, as far as I know, they weren't in flagrante. They were just sitting at a table talking and drinking. But Helen read the room and decided that Burke was cheating on her. A big argument breaks out, a really nasty argument between Helen and Burke. So Janet Brown decides it's time to leave, and she did.
I wonder if Burke actually didn't intend to murder anyone. Maybe he just brought Mary and Janet home for a little sexy time.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Hey, this sounds like what the kind of stuff these guys would be up to. But when Helen caught them, he had to reassure her by claiming that his intention all along was just a little murder, not anything untoward.
that could very well be it. He had to kill Mary to cover up the fact that he actually wasn't planning on killing her. He just wanted to have sex with her. And Mary, of course, was a departure from their usual victim profile. She was relatively young and in apparent good health, at least what passed for good health back in those days, right? And until then, their victims had been old. So a death from natural causes would seem entirely plausible to Dr. Knox and company, right? Also, their victims tended to be transients, often visitors to the city, people who wouldn't be missed.
That's a good point.
And who would not be recognized by Dr. Knox or his assistants or their students, right? Mm-hmm. But Mary Patterson, on the other hand, was apparently kind of well known in certain quarters. It was later reported in the papers that some of Dr. Knox's students recognized her when he was dissecting her body. So, you know, this might have been a bad move on a couple of different levels for Burke and Hare.
So, you know, of course, Burke and Hare did the murder.
They did kill her, sure, yeah.
Yeah. After Burke reassured Helen that his intentions were, you know, just purely honorable, that he just wanted to murder her.
Absolutely. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
We're just trying to make some money here, babe. She left to fetch Hare. And when they return, Burke and Hare murdered Mary by the usual means, and they stuffed her into a tea box and took her to Knox's school. Knox's assistant asked them where they had gotten the body, and Burke told them that they'd gotten it from an old woman after Mary had drunk herself to death.
Yeah, and reportedly, Mary was actually still kind of warm when they turned her over.
Yikes. So. Yikes.
Now, you got to wonder just how credulous Knox and his assistants were.
Yeah.
And I think it's entirely possible that they suspected there was some hanky-panky going on here, but they didn't really care.
Yeah.
Because Edinburgh, like every other major city in Britain, was undergoing a huge wave of urbanization.
Mm-hmm.
The countryside was basically moving to the big city, looking for work in the factories. All these new factories that were popping up because it was the Industrial Revolution, you know? And so everybody was going to the big city. And the cities were teeming with poor people. And a lot of the longer-term residents saw them as kind of an uninvited pain in the butt. I think there was not a lot of sympathy for a lot of the urban poor back in those days.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Yeah. So, and a lot, I think also probably they felt that most of these people had a fairly short life expectancy anyhow.
Well,
so
I think they were probably right about that.
So they didn't seem to really care. I mean, obviously something was up that you get the same guys coming back over and over again with dead bodies. You got to kind of wonder, right?
I mean, I think you could almost wonder just, you know, even the first time.
Well, yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess you say, oh, we run a boarding house. Someone died in our boarding house. No one's there to claim them. That's the reason why. How many times is that really realistically going to happen?
You can't have people just dying in your boarding house all the time. But, you know, it'd be totally.
Statistically, it's just not likely.
No, but, you know, actually, if they had gone and told them the God's honest truth about old Donald, just said, look, this guy was staying in my boarding house. He was sick and he died and he owes me £4 back rent. And so I'm not going to pay to have him buried, for Christ's sakes. Yeah, and so that would totally make sense, you know.
Yeah. Every time after that, it gets a little less believable.
Yeah, but
and then when you're showing up with a reasonably healthy young woman who's still warm at that point, you're now at this point you are an accomplice.
You're kind of I think so, but Those guys didn't actually have any consequences, but we'll talk about that later.
We sure will. So all this goes to underline the point that when Janet Brown returned to the boarding house looking for her friend Mary, she was given some kind of half lame explanation about how Mary met a traveling salesman and left town with him, and she didn't really pursue the matter any further. She most likely knew that the police would ignore her, so there was just not even a lot of point in going to them.
Yeah.
But she was, and this is where it's important, the first witness to the fact that someone had visited the boarding house and did not come out alive. So that's why we say that's Birkenhair's first mistake.
Yeah, it was. And the year goes on, and the killings continued, and we're not going to list them all here.
No.
There was one notable victim who was a woman who was out in public, too drunk to walk, and Burke happens upon her being helped home by a constable. So Burke just steps up and very kindly offers to take her home, and the constable says, okay, sure. And of course, you can imagine what happened after that, but I just thought, wow, that's kind of brassy, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, right?
but it worked out. The constable handed her over, and they made themselves about 10 pounds. So, jeez. Man. I know, right?
Yeah. So in June, they murdered an old woman and her blind grandson and stuffed the bodies in a barrel.
There was a twofer. Yeah.
Yep.
Didn't seem to raise any eyebrows at the medical school.
Nope.
Yeah.
Which, you know, yeah. They put the barrel on a cart drawn by Harris' horse. They got halfway to Surgeon's Square when the horse decided it just wasn't into it and it wouldn't go any further. It just refused. Mm. They hired a guy to help them truck the barrel the rest of the way. Then when they got back home, Harris shot the horse.
What a jerk, you know?
Right?
I mean, I can forgive a lot of things, but animal abuse is not one of them, you know?
It's probably a poor really horse. Heavy.
You know, I don't know. The horse was just old and tired or God knows what, who knows, but you know.
Well, I'm trying to picture I've never been to Edinburgh, so I don't know, but some of it can be really hilly. And I'm wondering if it just was just having trouble getting all that weight up a hill.
Yeah, it probably is. It probably was kind of a rough time for the horse, and he had just had enough, you know. Yeah.
They also killed one of Helen's relatives who came to visit from out of town.
Wow, nobody was safe from these people.
Yeah, and they made another mistake when they killed, this is a wonderful nickname, Daft Jamie. James Wilson was 20 years old, and he was a large guy with a club foot, made him limp really badly. He was said to be simple-minded, which we'd probably now talk about being, you know, mentally disabled, developmentally disabled. He made his living by just begging on the streets.
Yeah, well, so why was that a mistake, Vincent?
Well, the problem with killing Daft Jamie is that he was kind of a fixture around town. People knew him. Mm. So when Dr. Knox presented the body for dissections, some of his students recognized Jamie, and they said so. Knox expressed his skepticism about this and continued his dissection, but it was later noted that that he cut off Daff Jamie's head and club foot rather quickly and then kind of remove those from sight just so it wouldn't, I don't know, stick in people's minds. Dr. Knox, by the way, was never charged with a crime. His reputation took a big hit, though, for a good reason.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, really, as we'll talk about, really sort of all surgeons, anatomists, doctors. He was forced to leave town, but he did eventually end up teaching anatomy and physiology in London.
Yeah, although I don't think he ever quite recovered his reputation and his finances to the state that they were in. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the last killing was on, this is fitting, Halloween, 1828.
I wish I had one of those little keypads with like buttons that would play like sounds. Mm-hmm. They do on those crappy AM radio shows. I could be like, play like some organ or something.
Yeah, we're going to have to get one of those, actually.
We're going to have to get one.
Yeah, now that we got sponsors, we can afford some higher quality gear. So yeah, let's do that.
those big heating company money rolling in.
Uh-huh, yeah. So, okay, Halloween 1828. Burke meets an Irish woman named Margaret Doherty, who was visiting Edinburgh. Again, she fits the profile quite nicely. She was not quite ancient, but she was middle-aged. So, yeah, she could die any moment.
Yeah,
from out of town. He lures her back to their place with a promise of whiskey. Long story short, they got her wasted and they killed her. And they put her body under a bed in a spare bedroom until they could find a box to put it in and discreetly move it, which is all well and good, right?
Yeah, it sounds all right. It sounds like they're just doing what they've been doing.
Yeah, things are going smoothly. But there were two other lodgers in the house who were kind of the fly in the ointment here. James and Anne Gray were also staying at the boarding house. And they wanted to go into that spare bedroom because they had left a few things in there, but Burke would not let them. And this made them a little suspicious. Mm-hmm. And when they got the opportunity, when Burke and Hare weren't around and their wives weren't around, they went into that room looking for their stuff, of course, but also looked around to see what they weren't supposed to see. And under the bed, lo and behold, they find Margaret Doherty's body. Oops. Yeah. The Greys were just leaving to go fetch the cops when they ran into Helen. They confronted her and she offered them £10 to keep their mouths shut about the whole thing.
Maybe she should have pretended to be shocked and dismayed.
It's like, oh my God, a body? Are you kidding? But a bribe offer does seem kind of like an admission of guilt, wouldn't you say?
No, it's true. She's doubling down, right? Like if she at that point, she could have been like, what did my husband do? And it would have been all good. But if she's offering to bribe you, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, it sounds like, yeah, she wasn't even at all shocked or anything. She just, just said, right, £10 if you keep your mouth shut. And,
when the police showed up at the boarding house, Burke and Hare had moved the body and they'd gotten it to Knox by this point.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't say, they couldn't really say, hey, this one's kind of hot, better dissect it pronto, right? Like,
no, that would have, they could.
I do kind of feel like, I mean, these guys maybe are getting a little greedy, as we see a lot of times with these types of scams, like maybe they could have just taken the hit on this one and then, thrown her in the river or something.
It was really dumb to not get rid of the body. They should have done that.
Because that's the thing, is like giving it to Knox, a lot of people are going to see that body, like a lot more than would typically see a body if it was discovered by the police.
Yeah, and the body's
there, a room body full was, of people looking at it.
Yeah, there's that, but also the body was not necessarily going to be chopped up like right now or even they actually put them into the queue. It's like, okay, and we've got a couple more bodies ahead of you for dissection. So this one just goes on ice for, a few days or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so the body was still there, intact, when the police showed up at Dr. Knox's school. Mm. That's incriminating. Hey. Yep.
So James Gray, he IDs the body as the woman he'd seen drinking with Burke and Helen. Then Janet Brown, right? Remember Janet Brown?
Mary Patterson's friend, right?
Exactly. Yeah. She read about the case in the papers and contacted the police. She ID'd some of the clothes found at Hare's house as belonging to Mary Patterson.
Yeah, because they, dumb move, they kept the clothes.
Clothes cost a lot back then.
They really did. They were very expensive. They weren't going to wear
them. Maybe one of their wives was going to wear them, or like they can't.
I guess I don't know, but I guess they didn't stab her to death or anything. So I guess they were in decent condition. They weren't all blood soaked or anything. I guess I don't know.
I guess okay.
Yeah. But anyway, long story short, the jig was up. Burke and Helen and Hare and Margaret were all arrested. But believe it or not, the proof of murder was actually a bit thin. I mean, Margaret Doherty was dead, But her body didn't actually show any signs of violence. Again, their patented method of murder, they could suffocate somebody and leave no bruises or signs of a fight or anything like that. Three forensic experts examined Margaret's body and said that, yeah, she probably had been suffocated, but this just couldn't be proven.
I mean, I don't really know, because actually you don't hear about this very much, like death by smothering, essentially. Yeah. You think it would leave some amount of bruising as the person struggled, mm-hmm. you know, like around the nose or the lips or something?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a forensic expert, and this may shock you, but I've never actually suffocated someone to death.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah, believe it or not.
Yeah but it does seem like that would leave some trace. Like, just imagine them struggling, but maybe they got them so drunk they couldn't even struggle.
I think that was the general, what they usually did is they just got them so wasted that they were, you know, maybe even passed out.
Yeah.
Maybe they were actually completely already passed out. But yeah, so Mary Patterson, of course, the Janet Brown's friend, she had vanished, but in the absence of a body, it actually was not possible to try somebody for her murder.
Right, right.
Unless somebody had actually witnessed the murder. And Janet Brown had not witnessed the murder. Mm-mm. So, yeah.
So the Lord Advocate, Sir William Ray, prosecutor for all of Scotland, the whole thing, he decided the only way to get any traction in this case was to offer someone immunity to rat out the others. They made the offer to William Hare, and since he couldn't be forced to testify against his wife, Margaret, she was given immunity too.
Pretty much, yeah, kind of by default, I think, yeah. Yeah, so William Burke and Helen McDougall were put on trial for the murders of Daft Jamie, Mary Patterson, and Margaret Doherty. Trial began on Christmas Eve, 1828, first for the murder of Margaret. Burke and Helen, of course, pleaded not guilty. William Hare testified at the trial, and he said, of course, that Burke had committed the murder all on his own and that he had only arrived later and helped transport the body. Of course he said that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said, what would you say? They got you.
I know, right? Yeah. Well, he had immunity anyway. He could have said whatever, but... So, long story short, the jury deliberated about 50 minutes before returning a verdict of guilty, guilty, guilty against William Burke. Appropriate, because he was guilty of sin. But they returned a verdict of not proven for Helen McDougall, which is, I don't know, kind of BS in my opinion, because she was guilty of sin too. But
yeah, I wonder why they thought she was not guilty of something.
I think it was there was a sort of a turning point in crime culture in Britain, the way people viewed it. Women were not really seen as responsible for their crimes, and it wasn't until a little bit later, like later in the 19th century, suddenly the idea of the poisoning wife or the poisoning maid gained a lot of traction in popular crime fiction, and suddenly people's minds about that changed. But there was a point earlier on where it was just felt that she was just under the thrall of her husband, and did it because he forced her to or something. So,
do you know if that was her defense or if that just is just what you think people assumed?
Yeah, I don't know that. I didn't even know how much they had in terms of a criminal defense, to be honest. Yeah. So I don't really know, but that's my theory as to why, because frankly, she really was guilty. Although I don't know, maybe in the case of just this one murder of Margaret Doherty, maybe there wasn't enough evidence to actually implicate her all that hard, because mm-hmm. she was at being tried for just this one murder at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that was it too. Yeah, I don't know. But she certainly deserved to hang, really, just as much as Burke did.
Yeah, if you think that Burke did, I think she was part of it. But I think it's also kind of nasty that Hare and his wife made it out.
Oh, yeah. Of the four of them, all of whom, again, deserved to be hanged, only Burke was hanged. Yeah.
So Burke was sentenced to be hanged, and then he was dissected in public. Well, that's a little mm-hmm. bit of, I want to say that's irony, but I think that was done quite intentionally. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, people were really upset at Burke and Hare, right? This was big scandal at the time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. This was like national news. It went way beyond Scotland, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was. So anyway, the sentence was carried out on January 28th, 1829, in front of a crowd estimated to be, just think about this, at least 25,000 people.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a big crowd, man. That's like a sporting event.
That's a huge crowd.
Yes. How many people? I wish I'd looked it up. I wonder how many people were even in Edinburgh at that time. That probably.
I'm sure a lot of people traveled there from far away to witness the execution.
Right.
I mean, that was popular entertainment back in those days.
It was, and I think this was a big one. This was like the Super Bowl of hangings. So his skeleton is actually still on display at the University of Edinburgh in at the medical school at the University of Edinburgh, along with a notebook that is bound with his skin.
On there on the university's webpage, they have a picture of his skeleton there. They don't have a picture of the notebook. At least I didn't find it on there.
I hope it looks like the Necronomicon from Evil Dead.
I know. Seriously, that would be kind of cool. But yeah, that is definitely a way to disrespect his remains, people. You know,
they were making an example out of him.
Oh yeah, they were. But as for the other three, William Hare, Margaret Hare, Hiller McDougall, they all left town as quickly as they could. But even then, they all found that they were recognized in other cities as well. And they all narrowly escaped lynching at various times, you know, which is too bad. They kind of deserved to be lynched, if you ask me. But
well, they deserved justice carried out. And then if that couldn't happen, I guess, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
But as this story ends, we actually do have an unsolved mystery here.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to William Hare? So this is one of the most notorious serial killers in British history. A guy with a body count way higher than Jack the Ripper. We glossed over how many people these guys actually burked.
16 and possibly 17, and who knows, maybe more.
The number that I found just kind of checking your research, a lot of people think it's 18. I mean, some people say it's quite a bit more, but like that 18 seems like a good number.
Yeah.
But so this guy, I mean, he killed more than Zodiac.
He's a
pretty serious murderer.
Yeah, killed more than Zodiac and Jack the Ripper put together, actually.
Exactly. And he just vanished.
Yeah.
And you got to wonder what he was up to. Now, Hare was one of the meeker ones. Burke was a little more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he never reoffended.
Maybe he just decided it'd be better to go straight. But wherever he went, he had to move fairly far away, I think, to get to a place where he wasn't recognized.
I wonder if he moved to the U.S.
He might have. Yeah, or Australia. But
Australia, Canada. Yeah, I mean, not just here, but
Yeah, we'll talk about that in theories, because we do have theories, because this is a mystery. I mean, it's a big... Yeah. But so Hare was released from custody in February 1829. And he was sent in disguise to the town of Dumfries, about 60 miles south, since he would not have survived a day in Edinburgh walking the streets. Could you imagine?
No.
But even in Dumfries, he was soon recognized. The police had to save him from a lynch mob in Dumfries as well. So the next morning, they smuggled him out of town in the wee hours and turned him loose on the Annan Road, which is now the A75, and told him to walk to England. And that is the last that the world ever saw of William Hare.
Yeah.
So
that's crazy.
We're going to talk about the possibilities of what maybe happened to him
in the
series section.
We should check out some sponsor words.
Oh, yeah. Hey, guys. Hey, sponsors. Buy their products.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, what do we got here for theories? We have several different possibilities. Hey, want to say we're just misunderstood aliens.
You always read that one.
I know.
What am I not understanding about these murderers?
No, I'm just joking about that. Let's see, what else have we got here? Let's move on to a more serious one. Maybe William Hare wound up living in a cave on Arthur's Seat.
I have heard this theory. About the Arthur Seat dolls.
Yeah, the Arthur Seat murder dolls.
Guys, is it sure that they're murder dolls? I've heard that this is not necessarily... So just describe what they were.
Some people have called them that, the murder dolls, because those would be the people believing that it actually sort of is involved with Burke and Hare.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not actually proven. That is still an unsolved mystery.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about it.
Yeah. So in 1836, a group of boys was exploring on Arthur's Seat, which is a hill to the east of Edinburgh. And now it's actually sort of surrounded by Edinburgh, of course, which has grown in the meantime. But they went into a cave and they found 17 carved wooden dolls, each of them in its own little coffin. And these became known as the Arthur's Seat dolls, or murder dolls, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, they've been a mystery ever since. We've talked about it on my old podcast, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
But one popular theory is that someone close to Burke and Hare carved the dolls and the little coffins and put them in a cave as kind of a surrogate burial for the victims.
Hmm.
Yeah.
If you look up pictures of them, they are real creepy.
They are kind of creepy, aren't they?
They're like these little dolls, and each one has its own special little coffin. They mm-hmm. look like something from a Tool video. Like they're frightening. Like, have you ever seen like music videos by the band Tool? They a lot of time have these really creepy animated stop motion videos, mm-hmm. and they look like something out of a like a gothy heavy metal video. They're really frightening looking, which I think is fueled the speculation. If they'd just been cute little baby dolls, I don't know that anyone really would have cared.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also the fact that each one was in its own little box.
That's true.
You know, which was remarkably coffin-like, you know?
Yeah, and it does seem, you know, based on the descriptions, that they were placed there sort of ritualistically,
mm-hmm.
Which has led to lots of different speculation. I honestly can't riff on that too much better than you guys did in the old Thinking Sideways episode.
Yeah.
But if you're interested, you can check that one out. You can look it up. It is a really strange little occurrence, and they still have some of the dolls.
Yeah, they're on display.
Yeah,
but I think most of them are, you know, whatever ones are still around, haven't been stolen or burned or lost or whatever, are still on display at the National Museum, I think.
Yeah, I mean, part of, I think, what makes this a mystery is that the boys lost some of the dolls. They just, mm-hmm. just destroyed them. They also claim that they were arranged in some way, but it's hard to know how they were arranged because their story's different, because the first thing they did was just start kicking them around the cave.
Well, little boys.
Little boys partying. Going out and doing their thing. So.
I know.
So probably what me and my friends would have done if we would have found some weird dolls in a cave in our neighborhood. And so, I mean,
whatever. When I was a little boy, actually, me and some of my friends went into a cave and we found what I think might have been the Holy Grail. And we played catch with it until it broke. And, into the trash it went. So sorry, folks. let's get back to our theory here, though. What if it was William Hare himself who carved those dolls? So maybe he skulked back into the Edinburgh area and hid out in that cave, because obviously he couldn't live in the town.
Mm.
And he passed his time carving these little dolls. And maybe it's some sort of act of expiation for the crimes that he committed.
Right, right.
Yeah, I don't know. But
maybe he felt bad about it.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know if I believe this. I've always thought it was tenuous at best, the connection between Arthur Seat and Burke and Hare, but I do like it as a story. I love that he lives out his life a sad hermit in a cave, trying to hide from the crowds that want to murder him and trying to find some artistically motivated, ritualistic way to atone for what he's done, to give some peace to the people he robbed that rest from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool idea.
Yeah, it is a cool idea, although not the most credible, maybe.
Nah, I don't.
There's some other theories here that we've got.
So one is that Hare moved to London and continued to ply his trade, but just a little more subtlety.
Yeah. I mean, there was still a market for this sort of thing. You know, maybe he decided to just be a resurrection man instead of instead of murdering live people.
Yeah.
You know, and
maybe
that was, yeah. I mean, you know, it's still a pretty despicable way to make your living, but you know, it's less likely to get you strung up.
Yeah. And honestly, probably was, if you can stomach that kind of thing, it probably was a lot better way to make your money than being, you know, I mean, he was just a laborer, right? He didn't trade or.
Yeah, not really. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can see why someone would be motivated to do something really messed up like that when, mm-hmm. you know, their only opportunity in life is to just basically, you know, work their body till it falls apart and then, you know, die a death of illness and poverty.
Yeah. Well, you see, I mean, some of these people, like their, their second victim was like the traveling English who he made his living selling matches and tinder as kind of a traveling salesman kind of guy. Really pathetic. Can you imagine? I mean, you're not really making a lot of money. And Abigail Simpson, she was their third or fourth victim, they're not really sure. She would come to the big city to sell salt to supplement her pension. So we're talking about people that are really, really scratching out a very meager existence.
Yeah.
Back in those days. Yeah, and that included Burke and Hare. Yeah.
So maybe. Do we have any, were there any body snatching Burke-like crimes committed in the London area during Hare's life that went unsolved that we're aware of? Like, any evidence would point that he did this?
No, I mean, there were some other murders like theirs committed, but there's none that, the ones that I know about anyway. They caught the actual perps, and right. So Hare was not apparently implicated in any of those crimes.
It does seem like this is a hard gambit to keep rolling, right? Like eventually they're going to figure out what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean,
if you're murdering people, yeah.
Well, just that something's wrong. Like if Knox had been a little more ethical, a surgeon, you can really imagine him being like, you guys are bringing me a lot of bodies at mm-hmm. the very least being like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know,
yeah, you guys, I'm not
accusing you of anything, but you're sketching me out.
Yeah. I love the product, but, you guys, you know, I think, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There were some sightings of him, but they were just rumors. But there was one claim that he actually did wind up blinded by an angry crowd that threw him into a lime pit or something, and that he wound up begging as a blind beggar in the streets of London. But no evidence for that. Somebody could have just made that up. And it's the kind of thing that somebody might make up, just like, ha ha, he got his rightful comeuppance after all, blind beggar.
True, you
know,
true.
Which would be satisfying to a lot of people to know that he ended up that way, right?
Well, you also have to imagine after, you know, after everything he went through up until the cops released him on the road, he probably changed his appearance as much as he could.
Yeah.
He probably would be mindful of that and, you know, wore his facial hair differently or something.
You know, yeah.
Put some boot polish in his hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever it takes, you know, but definitely I'm sure he did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one theory is that he went to England, committed some minor crime, and then he got his butt sent to Australia, as they often did.
Transportation was still a popular punishment in those days.
Yeah. So do you know if there's any evidence for this, or if it's just something people kick around?
None whatsoever. And actually, I don't even know if people kicked that around. I just made that up and stuck it in there. I mean, people have speculated on the possibility that he might have moved to, say, America or Australia.
I mean, you'd think he'd want to get out of Great Britain.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, definitely. So it's entirely possible. And if you want to get to Australia, but you're flat broke, then getting yourself transported, it's probably not the most pleasant voyage in the world. But I mean, it'll get you there for basically free. So maybe that would be one way to do it.
I guess so. Yeah, just get yourself caught stealing. I always wonder if people did that. I imagine not. I think a lot of people died on that ship.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the problem with sea travel and such back in those days, is a lot of people did die from disease because you're in close quarters with all these other people. And so,
The conditions suck and the water's not good. And then, of course, this would be the criminal ship, not what even relatively poor immigrants were being booked on. It's probably even worse than that, I'm imagining.
Yeah, not going to be the lap of luxury. Nope. Plus, on top of that, if he decides to get himself transported, or however he decides to get to Australia, say, for example, what if he was recognized on the ship in the middle of the ocean?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. What happens then?
Yeah. That's a good point. That's a really good point.
You might just get tossed overboard there, dude.
All right. So before we wrap up, you got to tell me about your favorite theory.
Well, my favorite theory is this. The police say that they let him loose on the Annan Road. That actually, from the sound of Dumfries, goes east towards the English border, because there's a big body of water just to the south of the town. So they let him loose on the road and never saw him again. But really, I find it easier to believe that the police took him out there and, like, you know, killed him and buried him.
That's what I was thinking.
Either that, or if you're a little worried about your professional reputation, or maybe even getting arrested for murder, which what jury would convict you anyway. But say if you're worried about that, maybe. What's that?
I was going to say, the jury would be really awfully sympathetic.
Oh, yeah. But if you're concerned about keeping your hands clean, though, you could always just let the word drop to a few friends and say, hey, we're going to take him out. We're going to take him out bright and early tomorrow morning and plunk him down this road. So why don't you just go hide in the shrubbery down the road a little bit and bushwhack him and kill him. Just make sure the body never turns up, okay? Mm-hmm. And so that's possible if something like that happened too. It just seems unlikely that the police would just let him go. Don't you think? And so,
I'm with you. But I mean, I'd like to believe that they were good, honest police officers following their orders. But
I don't
find that super likely.
You could, like I said, you could uphold your oath and everything and just sort of accidentally, quote unquote, just let it slip to somebody, you know, that you were going to be letting them go in this place at this time. And there you go. Yeah.
No, I honestly, something like that is what I would guess probably happened.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there. I think that would be my guess, is that he didn't make it very far or very long before someone recognized him. I mean, how about this? I'm not even sure they made it to Annan Road. What if the cops just did him in, you know, Epstein'd him right there in the police station. And then when they were asked, yeah, last time we saw him, he was walking down Annan Road. You go look for him.
Yeah, it could have been. But, well, the nice thing about taking him out in the countryside like that is that you can go dig a grave out there and, you know, ditch the body. You know, so better to take him out of the station while he's still alive. You know, you could even make him dig his own grave for that matter. Hey, you know.
So do we have any idea what happened to the two women? Are they also missing persons on the historical record?
I believe it was Helen McDougall. I believe she was originally from Ireland, and it's believed that she went back there and just sort of disappeared from history. And but that's about it. I mean, far as both of them go, they sort of disappeared too.
I would be really interested to hear what their side of the story was.
They probably rationalized as well. The husband was my husband was really insistent. And by the way, these people were good for nothing anyway. So we figured, what the hell? We need the money. They probably would tell you something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't know. But, you know, I mean, those were desperate times. People were extremely poor, you know, and willing to do all kinds of things to make some money. So, So that there it is, actually. But you know, who knows? Maybe William Hare actually didn't die on the Annan Road. Maybe he lived. Maybe he still lives today.
Ooh.
You ever think about that?
Yeah. No, I never think about that. But I'm going to start.
Well, yeah.
All right. Well, I think with that terrible joke, we should wrap this bad boy up and return with some more
creepy crawly goodness next week.
Yeah, some more spooky season type stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're gonna enlighten you with some more tales of the macabre next week. But
awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, but do stay tuned for just a moment longer so you can hear the lovely Tess tell you all about how to find us on email and social media.
And of course, and you should find us on email and social media. You should get in touch.
Yeah, you totally should. Good. Absolutely. Yeah, say hi. And of course, the usual plea to give us a rating and a review, a good rating and a good review.
Yeah, please do that.
And that's about it, I guess. Yeah.
All right. We'll see you next week for another spooky episode. Yeah.
Bye.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/ Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.